Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources for February 15th, 2011. First off, we're going to open up a work session for introduction of committee measures, and with that, I will go ahead and open up a work session. Beth?
There are two LCs in front of you. LC, I don't have the number.
1661.
1661 and
3604.
3604.
Okay, and just a reminder, committee members, that we are only voting on the introduction of these committee bills for discussion purposes. So if you don't necessarily agree with the content of the bill, this is only to introduce them into the committee for discussion purposes. Okay? So with that, I will accept a motion from whoever wants to make one. Why don't we start over on this end of the dais?
Chair Dingfelder, with all due respect, I move that LC 1661, dated 1/28/11, be introduced as a committee bill.
Okay, Senator Thompson moves that LC 1661, dated 1/28/2011, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Okay. Any objection? Seeing none, the measure is introduced as a committee bill. We'll close that work session. Do I need to close and open or just have it?
Okay.
I need to change that script. So I will accept another motion.
Chair Dingfelder, with all due respect, I move that LC 3604, dated 2/3/11, be introduced as a committee bill.
Okay. Chair Olson moves that LC 3604, dated 2/3/2011, is that correct? Be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion?
Yes, that would be Senator Olson, not Chair Olson.
Oh, did I really say that?
Yes.
Senator Olson moves that LC 3604, dated 2/3/2011, be introduced as a committee bill. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the measure is introduced as a committee bill, and we will close the work session for introduction of committee measures. Thank you, members. And with that, we will move on to our first public hearing, which is on Senate Bill 82. I'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 82. And Beth, if you can provide an overview.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Senate Bill 82 makes amendments to the Oregon Electronic Recycling Law, defines recycling credit, and authorizes manufacturer program or state contractor program to claim the credit as specified in the bill. There is no revenue impact. We have not yet received a fiscal impact statement, and there is no subsequent report.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to invite up the director of the Department of Environmental Quality to talk about this bill. And committee members, sure you'll remember, this was a bill that I worked on in 2007. It passed the House and Senate unanimously. The system has been up and running now for a couple of years, so I've asked the department to provide us with an update to background on this bill. And so you're going to hear a little bit more about that. And I just wanted to, first of all, thank the department, because I know that you've been working hard on this program now for a couple of years, and there's lots of people in this room who have been actively involved, and we're looking forward to hearing from them today. So thanks for being here.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Dick Peterson, Director of Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality, and with me here today is Loretta Pickerall. She is the manager of our solid waste section in DEQ, and certainly any questions that you have that I'm not able to answer, she's here to answer them for you. So I'm really pleased to be here today to talk to you about the electronics recycling law and refer to Senate Bill 82 as well. That are the amendments to the e-waste law. And we have provided for you some testimony in a fact sheet that will be coming to you that gives some details on this program. This is what I would say, and thank you, Chair Dingfelder, for all your efforts to spearhead this program when it was first passed in 2007. It has been extremely successful in terms of recovery of electronics products, reducing waste that's going to our landfill, and controlling toxics from getting into our environment. So really, it's been a very successful program. As I'd mentioned, the electronics recycling law was passed by the 2007 legislature, and we began implementing the program in calendar year 2009. the framework for this whole electronics recycling law is a product stewardship framework, which really is thinking about not only products that are created and made, but how they're handled after their useful life. And it's really looking at a scheme that's not so much as a pure regulatory public responsible scheme in terms of managed products at the end of their useful life, but looking to the manufacturers of products, products to participate from the time of sale to the time of their loss of active use, and so they don't end up in a waste stream that becomes the public's burden to manage. And I would say that this methodology of looking at this product stewardship methodology of looking at product is certainly playing out and working well in Oregon around the electronics products themselves. One thing that's important for this particular law and this particular product to be managed is to make it convenient for the public. And that's one of the frameworks behind product stewardship, so if you have something that you want to discard or get rid of, that you can conveniently take it somewhere that so you don't have to store it in your attic until you make a trip somewhere long and far away. So the way the program was set up, to set up lots of convenient location sites to take these electronic products, and there's about 230 statewide. So it's no small number in terms of convenient sites to take these products. Anyone in Oregon can drop off up to 7 computers, TVs, and monitors for free. There's no charge to the public who has these and want to drop them off. They can just drop them off and not have to pay a fee for dropping them off. Now, here's the kind of good news of the program. We projected that in the two-year period, 2009 and 2010, there would be about 33.7 million pounds of electronic waste, computers, TVs, and monitors that would be dropped off. So the actual pounds that are dropped off in those 2 years is 43.2 million pounds. It's almost 10 million pounds more than we projected. So we far exceeded the goals that we had set up in this program. And that's really a good story for Oregon, and it certainly is good for a story for Oregonians that have these products in, like I said, their attic or basement or whatever, and they know when they turn them in, they're going to be handled in a safe, reusable way. So the other thing that we do to track this, we do have a good auditing program for programs and plans for how material is handled after it is collected. I will say that what we're doing now and ramping up our efforts in terms of looking at and expanding our inspection role where e-waste is handed in, to just make sure it a little bit of oversight in terms of it's being handled properly, so that's not creating a problem where it resides. So we're looking at that in terms of 2011. So that's a really quick overview. To the crux of the amendment, there really is, as Committee Administrator Petrino pointed out, there's two aspects of this bill. And it goes to the issue of about how much e-waste is being turned in. Is this would allow the recycling programs to earn credits for each year for the pounds that they collect. That's over the minimum obligation. So they can have credits if they get more than what is projected. And then they can use or sell those credits in the following year. And the reason for that is so they, when they do such a great job in 1 year and exceed the goals, that they're not penalized if they don't meet their goals next year. So it sort of harmonizes e-waste collection over the period of a couple of years. And the statute, the proposed amendment also creates a cap of 15% that you can't provide credit for more than 15%. And then the other change that is in the Senate Bill 82 is to change the date recycling programs report so it aligns with the sampling methodology that we've approved at DEQ. So we can get more timely information and do a better job of reporting out on the e-waste and a better job of managing the contracts and with the manufacturers in terms of projecting goals and managing that. So with that, that's concludes my testimony. I'm certainly here to answer any questions that you might have. And as I said, Ms. Pickerell Kroll is here to help if there's any detailed questions that I can't answer. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Loretta, did you want to say anything, or is you pretty much here to answer any questions?
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, I'm here to answer questions. Thank
okay.
you.
So I just have a couple of questions before we hear from some of the folks, I think, that are going to testify in the bill. If you could, this bill was passed in 2007. I think we were the second and the third state to
correct.
Adopt the program at that time. Can you tell us how many states now have similar programs, e-waste, and then how many states currently have adopted a credit program and what that credit is? And if you don't have that, if that's something you can follow up on.
Yeah, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, I'll defer to Loretta. My understanding is there's 20 or 21 states that have an e-waste program, and I'm not sure about how many have a credit program, so I'll defer that to you. Or correct me if I'm wrong in my number there.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, there are 24 states now that have e-waste recycling laws, close, and I cannot tell you exactly how many have credits or how they operate.
Okay, so as a follow-up, and I would like to see from those states how many have credits and then what percentage rate. Because in this bill, we're asking certain percentage rate, and since we don't have a national program, I want to see what other states are doing as far as consistency.
Madam Chair, if I could add another component of the bill is that the Environmental Quality Commission can adjust what the language in the bill can adjust the rate depending on factors like how it might harmonize with other states and that sort of thing.
Okay. So. Yes, we have some questions, and then we'll call up, I think, some of the folks who are interested in working with you on this concept. But I appreciate the hard work. I know it's been several years, but it's the numbers are pretty compelling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to say, I don't think we had any idea that these programs would be so successful. And a lot of credit goes to many of the people in this room who worked really, really hard and still working hard to make this program successful. So appreciate that. Senator Thompson.
Yes, Senator. Chair Dingfelder, one of my interns did a research for me on this. A couple questions she had. As products get lighter, will there be some, when your agency be able to maneuver those numbers and the requirement won't be so? Because I can see in the future as TVs and computers are getting smaller and lighter, maybe the weights will be requirements. Will there be anything set up for that?
Yeah, go ahead, Laura.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Thompson, yes. Every year, DEQ projects the total tonnage we anticipate will be collected. That's a weight. We do adjust that, consider light weighting that's occurring over time.
Okay.
Follow-up,
please. Another question. Is there, company came into my office about this matter, and I'm concerned that a lot of these products that go to these collection sites gets put on a pallet and shipped out of state to be scrapped. And if there are some companies in Oregon that could provide a lot of jobs in our state, is there any way, is there any room in this program you have to become a collector, or is that out of the question? If you're not a collector now, you're not going to be a collector. How is this program set up?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, I'll make a start at it, and then Ms. Pickerell can finish up. One of the concerns has been raised from the beginning in terms of what is the disposition of the final disposition of the e-waste and concern where it might end up. And the program that was set up in terms of having three manufacturer-led collection programs whereby they contract with a subset of places to collect, and then we have a state run contract program that does the same. So as far as other collectors being involved, I'm not sure how it would work with the manufacturers or us, but there probably is opportunities for collectors to participate with manufacturers in terms of adding them to their collection site portfolio.
It just kind of disturbs me a little bit that this is we've got a company in Oregon that could put people to work, and we're letting this recyclable, scrappable stuff that could provide jobs get out of our state and provide jobs at other states.
Mm-hmm.
So does your agency think about those things at all?
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, certainly we do. I think as we go to product stewardship and we think about sort of a manufacturer-led program, we work closely with the manufacturers because it's, you know, their job to work and set up the collection program through their contracting. We do want to ensure that it's good for Oregon in terms of ensuring that waste doesn't get out of hand, if you will, and look at audit programs. But we do defer to the manufacturers in terms of how they set up their collection program. Our certainty is that it's accessible and available to Oregonians everywhere. And so as far as collection goes, certainly we want to make sure that the facility that is collecting the waste or the e-waste from the manufacturers is convenient and located in Oregon communities.
So, and I have a follow-up to this. I think would be helpful. What I was hoping, and maybe you can provide this in a handout as a follow-up, just sort of a flowchart of how this program works here in Oregon, because for some of us who have heard this multiple times, we know. For the new members, I think it would be helpful if you can do a one-page flowchart that explains how this program works, because the state oversees it, but the manufacturers run it. I think it would also be helpful to list where the processing facilities are, and maybe some of the manufacturers can come up and talk about that and how they select those. Mm-hmm. The other is what are limitations in regards to interstate commerce. And I don't know if this would apply for recycling. I know for manufacturing it certainly would, that we couldn't prohibit an out-of-state mm-hmm. facility, but I'm not sure if this would apply as well or provide preference for in-state recycling. So I don't know if you want to address that, but certainly the flow chart, I think, would be helpful for this program, and I'm assuming you probably have that available.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we can provide that information for sure, and for the committee members, if there's any want to get into detailed discussion about that, we can make ourselves available to anyone that like to talk about it. And if Loretta wants to answer the question about
Loretta, can you identify yourself for the record?
Yeah.
My name is Loretta Pickerell. I'm a solid waste manager at DEQ. There are some interstate commerce issues that do come up if we try to restrict the flow of material. Currently, our law does not allow us to direct flow, and it does not allow us to require the manufacturer plans to negotiate contracts with any specific collectors.
It's left up to the individual manufacturers, and maybe when we have some of the manufacturers come up, they can discuss mm-hmm. that. So other questions?
Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. How were your goals established for collection?
Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Olson, every year DEQ determines a total amount of weight to be collected that year statewide. We then assign each manufacturer a portion of that weight based on the numbers of return devices coming through our system. We actually do sampling to determine that. Each manufacturer then has an assigned return share weight. They take that return share weight to whatever manufacturer program they're participating in. We have three manufacturer-run programs and the state contracting program. That program then is responsible for collecting the total amount of weight of all the manufacturers in that program. That's the minimum recycling obligation for that program. It's simply the minimum required to avoid penalties. Every program has to continue to collect year-round under a plan that they submit to us and that we approve.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I might add to that we look at overall sales to kind of project what might be coming through in the waste side as mm-hmm. well. So there's that part of it as well.
I apologize. I should have been more clear. Initially, when you first set the plan up, mm-hmm. when the bill was passed and you first set the plan up, you had to come up with a weight or some methodology to determine how much they needed to collect. How did that come about?
Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Olson, we sat down with a number of stakeholders at the beginning and looked at what other states had done and what we looked at, what Goodwill was collecting for electronics, what others were collecting in state. We had some data on electronic collections in the state and looked at other years, first-year programs, and negotiated an amount with stakeholders that we all could live with. We thought it was a low amount, but it was an amount everyone thought they could achieve. And, in fact, they did achieve it and exceeded it.
Follow-up?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So if you started with a low amount and they followed it and they did a tremendous job, and it's exceptional that they recycle all these products, it would be even more exceptional if we recycled these products in Oregon, so we had Oregon jobs for Senator Thompson. Why did you go with pounds and not a percentage of units sold?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, we did what the law told us to do. The law says that we will determine the total to be collected, and we will allocate that among manufacturers based on return shares. It does provide then that for the TV manufacturers as opposed to the computer and monitor manufacturers, the manufacturers that manufacture more TVs than the other devices we call IT devices. For those manufacturers, we then do take their total, the total return share weight of all the TV manufacturers, and we allocate it among them based on their market share. And they then have a return share that's first based on returns, then collectively reallocated based on their market share. Every manufacturer then has a return share. They take it to their plan. We did it that way because that's what the law provides. And the amendment last session, I believe it was HB 3606, specifically adjusted that reallocation for TV manufacturers in the way I just described.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, and certainly we'll have the manufacturers come up here, and we'll hear from them as well. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have, we'll hear from Brent Young and Danny Jones.
Do you want me to note these letters for the record?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just for the record, too, I want to note that there were two letters submitted to the committee, one from Recology and then also one from the Information Technology Industry Council, which you should have in your packet.
And if you can, please state your name for the record, and I'm going to ask if you have written testimony, if you can summarize it, because we'll all have a copy of that. Okay, so whoever wants to go first.
All right, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Members of the committee, thanks for having us. My name is Brent Young. I'm with E-Tech Recycling. We are located at 1600 Northeast 25th Avenue, Suite C in Hillsboro, Oregon.
Senator, Chair, my name is Danny Jones with E-Tech Recycling, same company.
You may want to pull your microphone down a little bit so we can hear you. Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks. So we are here, basically we oppose Senate Bill 82. I proposed or have prepared an outline, kind of breaking it into four topics. Some of it you've already covered with the DEQ personnel in regards to the collection network, the existing infrastructure. Then we come to addressing the credit system specifically, and then a little bit in regards to presenting some alternatives that have already kind of been discussed so far today. The collection network, we look at the original bill, and it said include convenience service in every county in the state and at least one collection site for any city with a population of at least 10,000. That number is going to become important. Collection sites will be staffed and open to the public at a frequency adequate to meet the needs of the area being served. So we look in 2009, an article comes out in the Oregonian, and it states, less than 5 months in, Oregon's free electronic recycling program is collecting too much too fast for the largest manufacturer group involved, prompting it to ask Oregon recyclers it works with to dial back their efforts. So 5 months in, they've already met their quota, and they're asking them to dial it back. So then we look at the 2010 numbers that came out on February 7th. We see one of the programs was at 216% of their return share. Another program was at 188% of their return share. And the state contractor program came in at just less than 100%. Going back to 2009 again an article from the Oregonian talks about a program, and it dropped two recycling companies from its existing or from its collector mix, both Garten Services of Salem and Columbia Recycling of Portland, to cut down the recycling volume. Then specifically with E-Tech Recycling, working with Jason Linnell of NCER, which is currently the state contractor, in March 6 of 2009, we received an email that told us that we would not be included as a collector or a processor in the program because Oregon E-Cycles is saturated, meaning they didn't need any more collectors and any more processors. So going to the existing infrastructure, the state contractor program shall, to the extent practicable, use existing local collection, transportation, and recycling infrastructure. I've included the additional emails you can look at in the package. What I want to note or highlight in that is that at no point is there any reference to, you know, that there was any intention to use the existing infrastructure, even though they were asked to address that issue specifically. All of the plans that have been accepted by DEQ to include the manufacturers program and the state contractor program came into the state and, in essence, reinvented the wheel. None of the existing infrastructure, with the exception of a couple of collection sites, have existing relationships with the recyclers used, meaning that if there was a collector out there that was already sending material to a processor, that collector was later told, once they joined a program, you're not going to be able to use that processor. You're going to have to send that material someplace else. In my opinion, that comes at a great expense. And what that is that those collection sites would still then have a relationship with the nearest processor or the company that they were already working with that they're going to have to use for the material that falls outside of the program that they're not being told what they can do with. So to date, all of the items collected in the programs except for the CRT monitors and televisions collected under the Oregon E-Cycles program are processed outside of the state. So then addressing the credit system specifically and looking at the return share calculation, the following statement is taken from an AOR newsletter in September, which states, many believe that there is little incentive for programs to collect material beyond the minimum obligation set by DEQ despite the requirement that plans collect year-round. Key words here are minimum obligation, which is equal to return share. So as the manufacturers have set up their program, their target is to hit the minimum amount that they have to. Reason being is everything that they go above that is going to cost money, which I understand. So instead of looking at credits, we need to look at how the collection system works and specifically the return share and reduce. By adding these credits, we would be reducing the minimum obligation even more. And what that is to say is that if I have a plan that's required to get 1 million pounds this year and I collected 216%, I've got more than enough to apply my 15% or 150,000 pounds to my current year, which means I need one less collection site. When I said we're going to come back to those collection sites in that first sentence, one per city of 10,000. Portland is a city of more than 10,000 people. By law, you only have to have one collector in the city of Portland. I fail to see how that is convenient. We would propose an alternative, and that is to do away with the return share calculations altogether and require the programs to collect all year long. There are models out there, specifically the Washington model, at which point nobody knows, other than their percentage, which was assigned to them, how much weight they actually have to collect until all the programs have reported. And at that point, it becomes, if somebody collected 216% of their share based on the 100% that was due, there's another program out there that failed to collect enough and would need to pay that program for that material. With that said, I come back to we oppose Senate Bill 82 because it will have an adverse effect on reducing the impact of the program to date and encourage the programs to continue to collect less material in an attempt to just hit their minimum return share. With that, I complete my presentation and am available for any questions.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to add anything?
No, if you have any questions, I can answer.
Okay. Questions for either of these gentlemen?
Just a clarification for the record. I'm assuming when you're saying Washington, you're talking about Washington State, not Washington, D.C.?
Correct.
Questions? Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, thank you. Did you try to become a collector?
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, yes, we did.
And what was that process like?
We had an opportunity to sit down with each one of the manufacturer programs prior to the commencement of the first year. The law became, or it took effect January 1st of 2009. So in late 2008, we were sitting down with the various programs. Most of the manufacturer programs that came in had pre-existing relationships with processing companies that were outside of the state. One moved their existing processor into the state and built a facility in Clackamas. The other was working with a couple of processors here in the state, chose to consolidate that material with the one in Southern Oregon and ship that material to Southern California. Then we were left with the state contractor program. State contractor program, based on the RFP that was submitted by DEQ, is required to have three processors. They had very early on identified one of the processors being a company out of Seattle, Washington, that was very much so involved with the creation of the Washington law. They then used another very large company that had completed all of the environmental management practices and the standards that they would have to meet basically before we did, and they're up in Vancouver. The last company, again, is a multi-state, multi-jurisdictional company that, again, had the standards in place, and basically we were told in regards to the state contractor program that they had their three, and it's because we were delayed in getting all of our audits done and in place in time.
And could you give me a conservative estimate, Mr. Young, on if you were able to get involved with this program, how many people you could hire and at your plant?
Mr. Jones would be better to answer that, sir.
If we can get the program, if we can participate in the program as a processor, we will be able to hire at least a minimum of 150 people within our company.
Mr. Jones, can you identify yourself for the record?
Danny Jones with E-Tech Recycling.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Other questions on this end? Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming here and testifying today.
Madam Chair, Sunday Church, thank you.
So now we're going to hear from some of the industry folks that signed up to speak. We have Tech America, Jim Craven, Dave Fiskum from Hewlett-Packard, and Jonathan Ames from Dell. We'll have you all up here together.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven with the National Trade Group Tech America, formerly American Electronics Association. We changed our name a couple years ago. I think I'm done with giving that speech. Thank you for allowing me to testify today and to be back with all of our good friends in the room who've worked diligently on this program for many years. I just want to say, as a participant in the original legislation in 2007, in the implementation work group that struggled and made the deadline to have this program up and running January 1, 2009, and then we've had an ongoing advisory group since to kind of oversee the program and its success, we support Senate Bill 82. It's a couple of small fixes that came out of the stakeholder process. It's not our bill. It's DEQ's bill. But I think the participants in the process, by and large, support the small, modest changes in Senate Bill 82, and so do we. That's it. Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, good afternoon. For the record, Dave Fiscom here for Hewlett-Packard. I think your staff has just submitted to you a letter which HP submits for the record along with a couple three-page fact sheet. What I want to do today is first express, Madam Chair, our appreciation, HP's appreciation for the leadership you've shown over the years in crafting environmental legislation, including in e-waste. You're always willing to listen to our comments, and we appreciate that kind of consideration. HP supports Senate Bill 82 as currently drafted. We have no problem with what it suggests relative to credits. We do understand, however, Madam Chair, and I did talk to you about this earlier this week, that there may be some proposals from some interests to expand the scope of products covered in the e-waste stream, and as our letter suggests, we would appreciate being involved in a process to decide what's appropriate for expansion so that it is a, as we would describe, a fair expansion. The third paragraph of our letter summarizes our point, and I will just read that briefly. HP believes that product scope needs to be defined fairly. HP urges the legislature to expand product scope only if all common large-selling consumer electronic devices are added at the same time as any additional information technology, parentheses computer, and parentheses devices are added. And I won't bore you today with the additional information we've provided for the record. Our point is we would appreciate being involved in any process to decide how to expand the e-waste stream in Oregon. We would appreciate your consideration in that regard. As for the bill as it stands before you, we support it as drafted.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Eames with Eames Consulting here on behalf of Dell. Madam Chair, thank you very much for working on this legislation. We'd also like to thank DEQ for bringing this legislation forward. The process of an interim work group, I think, has shown how stakeholders can come together and bring legislation forward that as Mr. Craven talked about, makes minor tweaks to how this program works. Dell collects is one of those collectors that has a statewide program here. We partner with Goodwill to collect in a variety number of sites, and we have collected every year over the amount that has been required for us. We feel it's our responsibility, and we feel pretty good about that. We support Senate Bill 82 as it is drafted, and we are open to discussion on what changes, if there are any. If there is a work group that's going to be formed, we'd love to be participants in that work group. We'd like to have the opportunity to be able to discuss any changes, and as the legislation and the discussion around the legislation moves forward, we'd like to be an active participant. So again, thank you to the DEQ for bringing this legislation forward. We support Senate Bill 82, and we look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you, gentlemen. Let's see if there's any questions.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Senator Olson.
Gentlemen, thank you. It's a very notable program that we recycle all this waste, although an old computer is still a good computer. My original question to the first group was, how was the original amount brought up and come about? And it appears that you were about 7 million pounds underestimating the weight that would be recycled. It looks a little bit better math-wise in 2010 in that you're only about 3 million pounds under, and statewide recycling goal is 23 million pounds in 2011. Since you made 24 million pounds divided amongst your three groups, how would the credits benefit you if you divide that up equally? You're not going to get a lot of credit out of that.
Senator Olson, Madam Chair, let me try, but you can always drag DEQ back up here. I didn't bring my cheat sheet with all the numbers on it. The first question about how did we set the original goal, as a participant in that discussion, we had a broad advisory group that really worked very, very hard, and I give the agency a ton of credit for delivering this law on time. Quite frankly, it was a estimate. Some people use the word guess, but it was an informed estimate. We said, okay, there was computer recycling in Oregon prior to this law. Dell was doing recycling, HP was doing recycling, Goodwill Industries was doing recycling. Lots of folks were taking used computers, sometimes charging a fee, sometimes doing it for free. So we had some idea of kind of the current run rate. We had some experience in other states, though Oregon was just the third state to pass a formal law. So we really had to take the data we had and project it, and the way we did it, there's other ways you could do it, was on a per capita, a per pound per capita, just to get a number. It doesn't mean every person in Oregon obviously is going to bring back 8 pounds, but so we basically took population, multiply it by a number, came up with a big grand number of pounds, and we set that as a goal. Now, people said, well, what if we're wrong? What if we're way underestimated? Then, and all this stuff comes in, well, then you won't have to recycle it. So we kind of cut a deal, as I recall, to say, you know, if we collect way over this semi-arbitrary number that we estimated, we'll pay for that. I mean, the original law said there's one invoice that goes out a year to manufacturers to cover the cost of that year. The legitimate concern was, what if we're way short? Who's going to pay for that? So we basically agreed, and it wasn't even specified in the law. We agreed to a second invoice to true up at the end of the year, everybody realizing it was a first-year estimate. So that's how we did that, and then as we do it for a couple more years, you're seeing the numbers get better. The world will keep changing. Someone mentioned the weight will change because of different products. A lot of the old CRT TVs are cleaned up. If you still have one in your house and want to get rid of it, you can do that now for free in Oregon. So we'll just have to keep doing our best to hit that number. So the second question about why would credits be useful? You look at the data to date, everybody's performing very well or hitting their numbers or doing way over, such as Dell. Say you have a year that, for whatever reason, consumer demand, whatever, because we front-load the estimate and true up at the end, and we come short. A company like Dell, who's been way overperforming in the first 3 years of the program, would have a little bit of cushion to true up their program at the end of the year. When they're doing, what, 180% the first couple of years, it's probably not, probably wouldn't come into play. But it's there to do that. Now, the program, the law, and the administration law requires people who are running these programs to run them all year round. You don't get to, say, meet your numbers in September and shut things down because you're done for the year. You have to maintain the same effort on a 12-month basis. So I think one further piece about the credits. Right now, you essentially a program administrator who was going over their numbers could sell those pounds to another program. There's no prohibition on that under current law. But as I understand, they'd have to do it in real time, sort of in that year. Having the credits be carried forward, they could theoretically sell those in a subsequent year to another program who was coming up short. So it's quite small, and it's sort of a balancing around the edges. It may not be used. It may be used, but it's probably not going to upset the apple cart in the near future. That's the best shot I can do.
The point I guess I'm trying to get to is that it appears when the program began, the tonnage recycled was pretty high, 19 million pounds, and it's progressively getting larger. So it appears to me that the numbers were low to start with, and we had an arbitrarily low level to attain. Now, if we looked at the math and were able to raise that level up higher where you really had to reach for it 12 months out of the year, but not penalize you if you fell short of that number, would that be better than giving you credits?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I haven't really thought through that. It's a real good question. I don't want to answer it just off the cuff.
That's
without
fine.
Checking with people.
Fair enough.
But
So would either of the other gentlemen like to respond?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, it's a good question. We have to look into it. You know, the beauty of the program is that it does adjust. It does self-adjust upwards and downwards. So if the estimate, which was appears to be low in the beginning, it has adjusted up. But, I mean, as you said, it went from $10 million to down to $3 million. And I imagine as it gets closer and the stewardship program it lengthens in the number of years, we'll get closer to the appropriate amount. You know, the question is will there be a dramatic drop at some point because of the weight or something like that? I mean, we'll see. That's why it adjusts is the way it is.
One final question.
One question.
Did any of your companies, when this program began, and once again, I do not belittle the program. It's a wonderful program. But did any of your companies look to Oregon recyclers to create jobs in Oregon, especially in 2009 when we're in a really slump with labor? Did any of your companies consider Oregon companies for this program?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I don't know. I'd have to ask. I'd have to go back and ask and see what they're, Dell's a pretty big company. They probably have some established relationships already, but I'd have to take a look.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, if I understand your question, I think, and I can't speak for Dell because Mr. Eames can speak for Dell, but in theory, Dell did arrange with a recycler in Oregon, Goodwill Industries of Oregon, for the recycling function. HP applied to be its own recycler in concert with a company that had a number of outlets in Oregon, albeit a national company, and we did not. HP's program was not approved, so we are now participating in the state-run program, and we have participated very genuinely in that. Back to your, so I think some companies did look to Oregon recyclers. In fact, you could say that in the day HP did, albeit it was a national company with a number of Oregon outlets that would have been places for recycling to occur. Relative, just quickly to the credit issue, as the letter I submitted says, HP has not asked for, nor do we oppose a credit. And I've made a note of the questions you've asked. I don't know how much we, as HP, I don't know how much HP would benefit from the credit based on the state-run program where we participate. And it appears to me, based on the words in Senate Bill 82, that participants in the state-run program, as well as their own program, would have the potential to benefit from credits based on the analysis. So your questions are good ones. They deserve answers. We don't have them today.
No follow-up. And Jim, and then quickly.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, just to be clear, and you have DEQ people here, the overwhelming majority of manufacturers who have obligations in Oregon because they either sell TVs, flat panels, laptops, computers, participate in the statewide program. And the way that works is DEQ basically contracted a firm through an open bid process to manage that program. So most of the management is not not my individual company setting up relationships. Dell does their own thing. Some of the TV people are in a consortium to do their own thing. But most of the manufacturers are not making those relationships. The state program is deciding who to use for processing and collection.
Madam Chair, I'd like to thank Mr. Fiskum for speaking for me, for not speaking for me.
he does that well.
I saw your lips move.
Exactly right. I normally have my hand under his goat. And, my understanding was from your question was actual recyclers. We do partner with Goodwill to and collection sites to collect, but as actually recycling, that's what I'd have to look into, and I'll find out a little bit more.
Thank you.
Any other questions on this end? Okay, before you leave, gentlemen, one thing I would like you to respond to is, and unfortunately only one out of the three of you were at the table for the original work group.
I think I was born then. Yeah. No, that was me. That was a knock on me.
We got it. So, but there was a lot of discussion about the covered products, as you know, and we agreed at that time that to limit covered products to monitors, CPUs, televisions, at the time, laptops. There was at the time we discussed having a portion of the bill that would require DEQ to do an analysis to look at additional products and come back to the legislature to add those additional products to the list of covered products. And as you know, that didn't move forward. So it's now been 3 years since we passed that original legislation.
Four years.
Time flies. And what I would like to hear from each of you is your views on adding additional products, what your company currently thinks about that, and because I know I've discussed this with each of you individually and would like to hear for the record what your company's views are, because one of the things that we didn't discuss up here is, yes, the weight is changing, but also the products are changing faster than we can keep up with, and we don't even, you know, some of these TVs I don't think are sold anymore. Products are changing very quickly. So we had tried initially to set up a program that was nimble. I won't say that our state program is nimble because we, at this point, we have to go back, look at additional legislation if we're going to change this list of covered products. So I'd like to hear from you, given the fact that we are only covering a portion of the current waste stream, any comments you have? We'll start with the guy who was in diapers when we were talking about this initially.
That was what it meant. I'm going to pay for that one. Madam Chair, members of the committee, and to answer your question, we're open to that discussion and to looking at additional products. So I don't think Dell has taken a position. The owner of Dell, Michael Dell, has wanted Dell to be the greenest company in the United States, and so I think that that's something that they would like to look, you know, that they're open to looking at. Obviously, depending on what you're requesting and what you're asking to have in there, we'd have to take a look at it, but we're definitely open to that.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven with Tech America. This response will probably come through a process with my members. You know, I'm a trade association person, and I serve at the will of my disparate members, so I don't have a particular answer for you today to that question, but certainly we'd be willing to participate in any such discussion.
And Jim, it would be helpful for the committee members that aren't familiar with your association if you can send us a list of your members. Send a list of your members.
Okay. We are a national trade association with almost 3,000 members, but I think we can either send you a link to the website or something so you'll know who they are.
Okay.
Certainly, these two fine companies are members of my association.
Madam Chair, Dave Fiskin for HP. Yes, we're open to expansions on several standard or several bases, sales volume, toxicity levels, weight, and then to refer back to my submissions to you today on some basis of fairness, and we have some information in the documents I've sent that can, at least from our standpoint, begin a discussion. We're pleased to have it. It may be time to add to the e-waste stream. And we're happy to do that as long as it's fair and takes into account those factors I mentioned.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you being here today and your comments. We have a couple more people that would like to testify on this before we move to our last bill. Alex Kyler and Holly Sears. Is there anyone else that would like to come up and testify on Senate Bill 82? Okay. Why don't you go ahead and come up? Okay. Holly, you want to get started? So we're running a little behind.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Holly Sears. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I represent the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. We're a statewide trade association that represents private solid waste and recycling companies here in Oregon. My testimony will be very brief, but I want to let you know that, you know, as ORA has been part of the e-waste legislation discussion since back in 2007, even before that, but when the original bill was passed, we were part of those discussions, and we've continued to stay involved in DEQ's ongoing e-waste stakeholder group along with many of the people in this room. ORA does not have a position on the bill as it currently reads. We're neutral. However, we do see this bill as an opportunity to make the e-waste program even stronger, and we look forward to participating in the work group to work out amendments to the bill that will be proposed, including an amendment that ORA will be bringing forward that requires all e-waste collectors in or out of a program would be required to register with the DEQ. We plan on bringing that amendment forward to the work group that I hear will be proposed, and we look forward to having discussions with the stakeholders in the work group on that amendment. So that's all I have. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Alex?
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. You also may recall, Madam Chair, Lane County had operated a program even before 2007. It was a fee-based program. We want to put on the record our concerns with something that has been discussed here today, which is that we've been sort of not necessarily a victim, but we've had to deal with this problem of the over-collection, the over-success of the program, where because of that, the overages, the site that we operated, our transfer station, was threatened to be, it just wasn't no longer necessary. So we were contemplating, well, do we close this down? Then do we restart again the following year? And so we're looking forward to working with DEQ to see if we could address that. There may be perhaps a solution by saying that in any given year that the program has to remain operational throughout the entirety of the year. Maybe a solution, but we'll be engaging DEQ with those conversations.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Craig Lorch. I run, I'm one of the owners of Total Reclaim. We're one of the processors under the state plan here, so we work with both the state contractor program and the IPR program, one of the independent programs. I didn't really prepare a statement on this bill. I was coming for the next show. But I wanted to add a couple clarifying comments, and if there were any questions about the Washington program, I can answer that. We are Seattle-based. We have an office in Oregon. And in Portland, we've got, we just expanded from 10 to 30,000 square feet and are growing our staff to fill it up, and we've been here for about 5 years, so we were here before the program started. Let's see. One facet of the Washington program is because, well, there's only one plan up there. No independent plans have succeeded in becoming implemented up there. So there's only one plan, and the law requires that the standard plan up there must take all collection sites, regardless of, you know, they must take all comers and all materials. That was a little different down here because DEQ was charged to figure out what the volume was and aim at a certain volume and then readjust that every single year. I think one of the impacts of that is up in Washington, we've seen a growth in collection sites through the program. As years have gone by, we've seen more come on. Some have left because they've been bad actors. Some have decided it wasn't in their business model to continue collecting, but in other cases, they've added collectors. In Oregon, we've seen a reduction in collection sites over time, and there's been challenges in some sites because the volumes of material coming in. Processors have been stable. As far as I know, all the processors that were at the beginning of the program are still involved. And that's my comments.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Questions for any of these folks?
Yes. Mr. Lorch, if we were to go to a Washington-style process, could we anticipate an increase in recyclers in the state of Oregon then?
Probably not, because you already have a situation where all the material is being collected. I mean, I'm just guessing. But I guess that depends. Well, I should back up. That program did the same thing that each of the plans had to do down here, which is go out and solicit for processors that met their criteria, met their standards. In the case of the state of Washington, 7 processors succeeded in meeting those standards, 6 of 5 in the state and 2 outside of state.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Hey, I have a question for you, Craig. Remind me, in Washington, does the state certify collectors?
The state has collection standards. It does not certify collectors.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? On Senate Bill 82? Okay, with that, committee members, as you can see, there's some work that still needs to be done on this bill. So there will be a work group. Folks who expressed an interest, Beth will be notifying you, and so stay tuned. With that, the chair will most likely be staffing the work group along with, or chairing the work group along with Beth Petrino. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 82. Now I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 529. If you haven't figured out, this is Product Stewardship Day. So you're going to hear from many of the same players. Some of the manufacturers will change. But since my name is on this bill, I thought after Beth gives an introduction, I'll provide some opening comments.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Senate Bill 529 requires producers of lighting that contains mercury to establish product stewardship programs, specifies mercury content standards for lighting, and state procurement policy for lighting that contains mercury. There is an emergency declared. The bill will be effective upon passage. We do not have a revenue or fiscal impact statement at this point, and there is no subsequent referral.
Okay. And did you want to say anything about what's in this packet?
There are a number of letters in the packet. I believe I'll have to see whether I believe most of these people are here to testify. So.
Okay. All right. And committee members, there's a couple of handouts at your desk that I have placed there if you wondered how they showed up. One is a one-page fact sheet that our office prepared just with an overview of the bill, and the other is an article that ran. Doesn't have the date on it. Oh, yeah, January 14th in the Oregonian on this issue. So this bill sets up a recycling program for compact fluorescent lights. This will look familiar because it's a similar bill that was introduced last session by, I'm not sure if it was a personal bill or committee bill last time. I think it was a personal bill. This idea was brought to me by a constituent. People often ask, how do you come up with these ideas? And they said, you know, the e-waste program was great, but why aren't we recycling compact fluorescent lights? And so I introduced this bill looking at the product stewardship as a way to address the product's environmental health and safety effects throughout its life cycle. So as you've heard, we already have the e-waste bill. Last session we passed in 2009 a paint recycling bill. So this bill offers another chance to advance product stewardship principles in Oregon. And the bill calls for a statewide collection and recycling program for compact fluorescent lights. As you know, there's been a lot of transition away from the traditional incandescent bulbs to CFLs, as we call them. And that there's concern about the fact that they do contain mercury and making sure that they're properly disposed or recycled because of the potential health concerns with mercury. And for those folks who've been around for a long time, we've been dealing with mercury in other products, thermostats. We had a bill, I think, 8 years ago to deal with mercury in thermostats, if I'm recalling that right. So one of the concerns was what's happening with the CFLs. Are they being recycled, thrown away, ending up in the landfill or in the trash, and the concern about if they're broken, what to do with them. And more consumers are transitioning to this product. So this bill, which you'll hear about, I'm sure you'll hear folks coming and testify. We have folks both for and against. This will establish, like you've heard, a safe and convenient collection system, set a standard to limit mercury content of all lighting, set up an education program, and reducing health exposures from mercury. There's two other states that have passed this product stewardship for CFLs, Washington and Maine, and additionally Vermont has introduced a bill this year aimed at mercury-containing lights. So we'll hear from many speakers about this bill. I think, was the agency going to come up and say anything, DEQ?
No.
Not rushing.
No.
Okay. Because you weren't signed up, but I wasn't sure if the agency wanted to say a few words or not.
My oversight, yeah. I meant
to. Okay, well, come on up. We do have quite a few folks who want to testify, so if you can keep it brief, that would be great. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm with the Department of Environmental Quality. I've been asked to talk about mercury as an issue for the department and also a little bit about what we have in the way of collection and recycling for mercury lighting in the state of Oregon. It probably wouldn't surprise any of the committee members to know that mercury is a high-priority toxic chemical for the department. We have a list, we call it the focus list, of high-priority toxic chemicals that includes about 53 chemicals or chemical classes. Mercury is on that list. We're generally concerned with mercury getting into the environment pretty much in any form or any amount. Obviously, it's not realistic to stop all mercury from entering the environment, but where we can minimize it, it's really important to do so. And so that's our general approach to mercury, whether you're talking air quality, water quality, land quality, you know, anything like that. So it is a high-priority toxic chemical for us. If you're looking at mercury and specifically CFLs, compact fluorescent light bulbs, and mercury tubes, I would generally say, to be brief, that there is very good collection and recycling network available for large businesses and large institutions. They have professional vendors who are regulated and managed, who collect the tubes that are, say, in this committee room, the fluorescence tubes, and manage those properly. If you're talking, however, about households and smaller businesses, the opportunities are more limited for convenient collection and recycling. That's not to say that there aren't opportunities. There are a number of retailers who provide this to their consumers, notably Lowe's and Home Depot. I also believe IKEA does. There's an IKEA store in Portland that does that as well. There are also local governments who offer the opportunity for their citizens to take the bulbs that they've used that are burnt out and bring them to a place to be safely handled and disposed of and recycled. You also find that there are some other retail establishments to do that. I think the issue is whether that network as it exists is sufficiently statewide and sufficiently convenient to encourage the recycling of these CFLs. And I should note that people are buying more and more compact fluorescent light bulbs, and that's a desirable thing. They last longer. They use less energy. I think it saves people money, and it's better for the environment. So it's certainly the right thing to do. I think the issue is, what do I do when my bulb is burned out and I have to take it somewhere? And it does contain mercury, and the components of that bulb are recyclable. And so I'm looking for a convenient and safe place to go and get it collected and recycled, and that's the issue. There's about 14 counties in the state of Oregon who really don't have any service at all and for their CFLs. And there are counties that do have options available, but they're often collection events, and those are only available for a certain time or a certain time of the month or a certain time of the year. So I think there is a question about how adequate our collection and recycling network is in the state of Oregon. I want to be very clear to suggest that there is opportunities available to the consumers. The question is whether it's sufficiently convenient and sufficiently statewide. With that, I can take any questions the committee might have.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you to follow up on that, and then I'll take questions from my committee members. Does DEQ have an estimate of what percentage of CFLs are being collected and recycled statewide? Probably more in the residential, because that's mainly
right,
what we're talking
right.
about.
I do have those numbers with me, and I want to say that these numbers, I think, are from 2007, so they're not the most up-to-date numbers, but it's the best that we could get. There are roughly, and this is focused on fluorescent bulbs, there's roughly 6 million fluorescent bulbs that are disposed of in each year in Oregon. And our estimate is that only 2% of the household lights, so those coming from households, are actually recycled, and about 30% of the commercial lights are recycled.
Okay.
And I should note that the belief is that with the buying trends being what they are, we're probably going to see more and more CFLs disposed of over time, because people are making that switch to CFLs as opposed to the incandescent bulbs.
Okay. Other questions for the department?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, I take the CFLs to Home Depot. I'm not sure if Lowe's takes them back, but there are some places, and I just wondered if that, you know, if this would be more convenient than doing that.
Madam Chair, Senator Haas, the way the bill is structured is there would likely be more opportunities statewide for someone to take back their used bulbs in an area where you have Home Depots, and I do believe Lowe's actually takes them. That may be convenient, but I think in particular in the rural parts of the state, those opportunities are more limited, and the way the bill is drafted, those rural areas would also have at least one site in the county, and anywhere you're talking that has a city of 10,000 or more, there would also be a site available as well.
All right. Thank you, Palmer. I'm sure there'll be some other questions. Okay, I'm going to call folks up. That doesn't necessarily mean you're... I'm just calling you up at three at a time because we have a couple pages of folks signed up to speak. So Scott Clegg from Metro, Larry Tuttle, and John Miller. And just a reminder, if you have information written, please, if you can summarize, and remember to state your name for the record. Scott, why don't you get started?
Hi, my name's Chair Dingfelder. Members of the committee, my name is Scott Clegg. I work for Metro in the solid waste.
You can move that microphone, too, if it's better for you. Okay. There you go.
Thank you. My name is Scott Clegg. I work for Metro in the Sustainability Center. I'm here today to talk a little bit more on the overview side. Palmer's done a pretty good job here already of kind of giving some of the basic issues of background on why we need the bill. I've submitted some written testimony. I won't go into detail on that, but it talks a little bit more about Metro's experience in that. I don't take this opportunity to kind of talk about what the bill in concept is trying to achieve. As we've talked about, it is a product stewardship bill. The idea is that it would attempt to address the problems that we're having with the current system, which is that, as you've heard, it's really not an adequate collection system. My take on this is that compact fluorescents and fluorescent lights in general is an important issue. It is one of those conundrums where the fact is that the lighting is very important that consumers adopt. It provides more efficient lighting, saving for residents. They're about 75% more efficient. They save a lot for consumers, provide them some monetary savings on their energy bills. But we also know at the same time mercury is a toxic pollutant, and as DQ talked about, it's something that we're trying to address and eliminate. Three of the really problematic factors that we're trying to juggle here are is that we do know that the improper handling and disposal of the lighting is a problem. I think there's general consensus that the idea is that we need these recycling programs and we just need to provide them in a convenient way and at a reasonable cost. Second of all, we do know that the lighting stream that has mercury in it is growing. From the period of like 2005 to about 2008, the number of CFLs grew about 30%. We think there were probably about, back in 2005, a couple million sold in the state. We're probably looking at steady growth in that over the next several years, maybe 5% a year. And if you think about your own experience in your home a couple of years ago, you had one or two, and now you go to a store and there's six packs and eight packs of them to put in. So, and the price has gone down significantly also. In terms of from the consumer point of view, however, though, there really isn't a sufficient opportunity, we believe, to recycle these and get them handled correctly. Palmer mentioned, DEQ mentioned some of the various providers across the state. Metro does, for example, provide collection for these at our two transfer stations as well as our household hazardous waste events. We have about 36 of those single-day events a year. But we think that with the growing number of bulbs out there that this is just not sufficient. We collect about 50,000 bulbs anticipated for the next year or so. And if you kind of scale that up and include some of the hardware stores, that's still a fairly small percent of that 2 million that we talked about that are probably out and available now to be to recycled. So we think that this bill provides several key elements that will really make this system get up and running and be benefit to all Oregonians. First of all, it provides for a level of convenience. We are in the current bill, there is a provision that talks about a certain number per county and then per population. We have talked about with stakeholders up till now about maybe modifying that a little bit to find out maybe the urban areas don't need quite so many, maybe the rural areas, we need some sort of a sliding scale, so we're willing to work on and discuss that. Second of all, there are performance goals in the bill, but we're willing to be very flexible with the industry on those. We recognize that keeping track of how many bulbs have been sold, how many available for recycling is a difficult thing. A lot of the sales data in that is on a national basis. So we're talking about working out over a period of a couple of years what would be the best performance standard, including performance standards that relate to how satisfied consumers are with the program. And finally, also, we also recognize that consumer education is really a big part of this. A lot of folks know that there's more mercury on the bulb. Some people aren't too sure about that. There's not necessarily been a strong outreach program that people need to understand that they should not go in the trash, they should be recycled. So we think that in addition to just having collection, you need to have the performance goals and the consumer education. The other thing I'd like to mention is that in terms of the education standard on this, there is, in the bill as introduced, a disposal ban. We understand that our partners in the solid waste industry, the hauling industry, Aura, we have had conversations about, well, is there some other way we can phrase this disposal ban, maybe in terms of a required recycling requirement on residents, because we understand that the hauling industry and disposal industry is concerned about not picking through the garbage for one or two bulbs, so we're willing to work on that. So that's kind of in a nutshell why Metro supports the bill. We think that the components will get a system up and running and started, and it'll provide a really great service for Oregonians.
Great. Thank you, Scott. John, can I get the next? Just need a microphone.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. I'm John Miller, President of Wildwood Mahoney, a group of companies here in Salem with offices at 4985 Battle Creek Road Southeast in Salem. I'm here to support Senate Bill 529. I'm a resident of Marion County and a small business owner, and I'm lucky to be in a county where there's a very progressive recycling program in the form of Marion County Public Works. But due to a lack of resources, they really aren't able to provide convenient services to businesses. Mr. Mason from DEQ is absolutely right. None of the Lowe's or Home Depot programs are open to businesses. It's residences only. I think they have a limit of 10. And Marion County, I think I've included a graph of their recycling of fluorescent tubes and compacts over the years, and they spent over $10,000 on that alone last year, and those are resources that they simply don't have because there's no revenue associated with it. Our companies have been a pioneer in green development and green building for 40 years, and we use a lot of CFLs. And as an early adopter, we're used to kind of inconvenience and trial and error, but the popularity of the CFLs is such that we should be well beyond that, and we aren't. And my guess is that the inconvenience of recycling is not only losing some of the energy they're supposed to save by people having to drive pretty long distances in some cases to turn them in, but also it's pollution because people aren't recycling them. I think those numbers, I was quite surprised at the 3% on residences. If I want to take CFLs to Marion County, I have to call first. I can go in only on Thursdays or the first or third Saturdays of the month. I'm charged $2.50 a pound and a minimum of a $100 fee. It reminds me of a sign I once saw in an Anchorage junkyard that said, guard dog on duty 3 days a week, you guess which night. It should be more convenient than that and simpler. I can pay a company like Lamp Tracker $109.50 for a prepaid shipping box for up to 125 bulbs. That's 88 cents a bulb. That's pretty big money. And I stopped by Walmart yesterday, who is one of the biggest pushers of CFLs and I think has done a good job of promoting them. They don't take them. So I think that anything that you can do to make it easier for small businesses as well as residences to use and recycle these would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Larry?
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Larry Tuttle. I'm the director of the Center for Environmental Equity. Since our founding in 1994, about 80% of our work has been directed to identifying responsible parties to clean up pollution left behind on public lands by mineral miners. And much of that pollution involves heavy metals, and that's what actually attracted us to this issue as well. Mercury is among those elements and heavy metals that we're trying to keep out of the environment. And we have ways in which we can keep mercury from compact fluorescent lights and other mercury-containing lights out of the environment. And I believe a product stewardship bill is a good way to begin that process. And we will certainly support any opportunities, any local initiatives, including the product stewardship bill, to divert hazardous household waste, including mercury-containing lights, from the residential waste stream. One thing I wanted to add to the DEQ statement earlier, I believe in DEQ's testimony, which I reviewed before I came here, the testimony in the last session, about 95% of all compact fluorescent lights that go into the residential waste stream are broken before they reach the transfer station. So the 2 million that are going into the residential garbage in the metropolitan area of Portland in the metro region, 95% of those are already broken and release mercury before they get to their destination. There's a couple of technical things I'd like to point out in the bill. It's been a number of years, as Committee Administrator Petrino and I discussed earlier today, 25 years to be exact, since I've actually been involved with very much with the legislature, so my bill reading skills may be somewhat suspect. Given that, I did read the bill, and I do not believe that the bill is clear that it applies to all legacy bulbs. That is to say, bulbs that were sold after 2001. And I think this can be fixed fairly easily, but the people I've asked to review it, as well as myself, are about split whether it actually covers those bulbs or not. The product stewardship bill is not going to do much if it doesn't cover bulbs that are already in use and being used and disposed at this time. I also would like to direct your attention to Section 15, which appears to allow the Environmental Quality Commission to postpone the prohibitions, implementing the prohibitions in Section 15. And I would suggest that some sidebars be put on that so this is not a perpetual postponement. And then the third thing I'd like to point out is that other states and jurisdictions that have either adopted a product stewardship bill for mercury-containing lights or have prohibited their disposal in household refuse and trash find that the most cost-effective and efficient public outreach is actually a label on the compact fluorescent lights or bulbs that indicate that they should be disposed of as hazardous waste. Now, I left a bulb with the assistant committee assistant a little while ago that was distributed at a fix-it fair by Energy Trust of Oregon last year. And if you have a chance to take a look at that and find where the warning label is, please do, because I turned it over several times. And given the fact I have trifocals, there's a certain limitation involved with that, but it isn't a prominent label. And if we actually are going to tell people that these have to be disposed of as hazardous waste, we ought to let them know at the point of sale, at the point they open the package, and make that a continuum. Thank you. I'm open to questions.
Okay. Any questions for these gentlemen? Okay, before you go, I will say, and committee staff and I, in doing research today, and I'm sure we'll probably hear this from some of the other folks, but on US EPA's website, what I found today, that as of mid-2011, I don't think they said exactly when, the Federal Trade Commission is actually going to require labeling for CFLs, LEDs, and traditional incandescents. So there's going to be a labeling requirement on all of those bulbs about mercury containing, and also apparently a link to an EPA website. Now, when I linked to it today, it said on there that there was an error. So it was pretty interesting because it said link here to look for recycling opportunities in your state, and when I clicked on it, and I did it several times, it said error. I was like, okay, well, obviously that still needs some work. So anyway, just a follow-up to that. So thank you for your testimony here today. So we have, I'm going to call up the next three folks, Louis Pitt from the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs, Chris Fick with the League of Oregon Cities, and Mark Cohorse with NEMA. Welcome. Louis, you want to get started?
Sure. My name is Jan Schmidt. My English name is Louis Pitt, Jr. I'm Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. We do have written testimony, and I think it's better served just talking about Oregonians and who we are, and then talk about where we have our impacts as a tribal people, and what is it we're, you know, what's the interface between your ways and our ways. Well, who we are is the people that have been here for thousands of years and just continuing the way of life that we have. We depend very much on an environment that is clean, clear waters, cold waters, air that's clean and such, because we still live very much off the land. We've been, I think, never have left the Columbia River, and I think you may have heard some of the reports about how much salmon we consume. As I remember when I was young, when there was Celilo Falls and such, is that we had like a summer school for Indians and Indian kids. And when you woke up in the morning and you had breakfast, you had kind of some of the usual breakfast things and salmon. And for lunch, what did we have? We had salmon with a little different style, different kind of foods and such, dinner. And if you woke up in the middle of the night and were hungry, guess what you had? Salmon. So I think that still continue today. We have a tremendous, I think Warm Springs is still very, very Indian. I love it for that. And very tribal. And so we're not going to change our consumption. I think I heard some committees down here, more business-oriented, that said to, you know, the simple answer is to stop eating salmon. Go and tell the Warm Springers that or the Umatillas that and see how you, if you can get off the reservations. Thanks to you, Chair Dingfelder, for your work. This is very exciting to hear what's going on. It's just, you know, a lot of people talk about rights, but there's also responsibilities, stewardship. It's wonderful. And whoever that advocate was that talked to your constituent, to thank them too for us. And I thank Critfic and Umatilla, I think, for pushing the consumption about trying to educate the state of Oregon about the four times, on the average, about four times the amount of salmon that we eat from regular citizens. And again, I eat salmon. There's oils in salmon, as you know now, with all of the health foods you have, is that we've always known salmon to be a magical food. It's also a religious food, too. So we're not going away. You're not going away. And we're going to very much depend upon you as our neighbor to take care of your business as stewards, as well as we taking care of ours. Where? Don't think we're talking, that I'm talking just on reservation. We're talking about the 10 million acres that we gave to the United States that we have a lot of say over. We gave to the United States one-sixth of Oregon. And so within that, we reserve certain rights, and one of them is the right to have salmon, not just fish for salmon. Some people try to sell that. You know, you can go fish forever if they're... Got to have something in the river. So we've battled for quantity as well as the quality, too, of the elements that are related to salmon. And we also, in that 10 million acres, have outside of that, even to the down below Eugene, to the Willamette Falls, to State of Washington. Begrudgingly, our Yakima brothers up there acknowledge that our people do use the area up there for huckleberries and some hunting and such, and all the way over to eastern Oregon. Tribes that have treaties do have these off-reservation rights. Umatilla is very similar to who we are. And so we gather and collect eels, assume is what Warm Springers call it, and those are very dependent. They live, they're cycles. They go out to the ocean and come back up, but they're very much into the products of cities, very much into the products of what we put in the air. And so it's another part of who we are that depends on the cleanliness of the environment. Of course, salmon and resident fish such as hul is rainbow trout, is we eat salmon throughout the year. Salmon is very much a, when we have our ceremonial dinners, we start out with water, salmon, deer, roots and berries. And ever since, it's getting to be a while now, ever since I've been a kid, is that it's been that way. And so those are the foods that very much we depend on religiously. And we have other rights, too. That's the right to commercially sell salmon and to just have salmon to maybe trade now and then. So, but it's very much a spiritually a part of who we are. It's like sanctifies, I think, who we are. We have a covenant with the Creator that says we have to take care of our bodies and take care of the land, too. The what is mercury? Anything you can do to help keep, I think the water is clean in the state of Oregon, where it's going to help us. The air is clean. It's going to help all of us. And one neighbor to another is, I think I've talked about some of our rights, but we all have that responsibility to do what we can. And again, I thank the state of Oregon for, I think, many of the more aggressive and some of the approaches that's, to me, I get spoiled by it. It's typically Oregon, and we need to do more. So keeping poisons and toxics and carcinogens and those new words and whatever out of the water, because we all depend on that. And so anyway, as a Confederated tribal member and a state citizen and a federal citizen, is that I just really thank you quite a bit and hope to, you know, was able to get you the message that you're not in it just alone. And I appreciate, the whole idea of this. And I'm always looking forward with you, Chair Dingfelder, as some of the major, I think, advancements we've had in the past to protect our precious state. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair, other members of the committee, I'm Chris Fick with the League of Oregon Cities. I'll be very brief in my testimony. The League does support the general product stewardship principles laid out in Senate Bill 529. The League is in favor of establishing statewide stewardship standards that ensure the recycling and proper disposal of products that contain mercury at the end of their life cycle. We certainly think this bill is a step in the right direction. We're committed to working with stakeholders and with sponsor Senator Dingfelder on modifying this legislation so that it reasonably meets everyone's needs and meets the convenience standards of products that contain mercury. From the League's perspective, we'd like to see this bill allow local governments to review and comment on product stewardship principles before their submittal to DEQ and receive answers back to any questions raised by local governments about those plans. We'd also like local governments to continue to have the authority to implement other product stewardship collection mechanisms like annual or semi-annual collection events, which are cost-effective and effective means of getting these products out of the traditional waste stream cycle. We look forward to continuing to work on this important effort with stakeholders and with members of this committee.
Chris, and just a quick question, and I don't know if you'll have this off the top of your head, so if you can follow up, could you let the committee members know how many of your members actually have recycling facilities or hold events within their cities?
Sure. I can look into that number before I get it back to you.
Great. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Kohorst. I'm Senior Manager for Environment, Health, and Safety with the National Electrical Manufacturers Association. We're located outside of Washington, D.C. I've come this way we represent the interests of the U.S. electrical products industry generally, but I've come out here today to present comments that reflect the view of our lighting products division. And these are the companies that manufacture the mercury-added energy-efficient lamps that we're talking about today. I include among them GE Lighting, Philips, Osram Sylvania, most other U.S.-based lighting producers. I want to start by saying that the NEMA lamp section very much respects the intent of this bill to address concerns associated with lighting that contains mercury. There are parts of the bill that we support. We have supported in other states. We're happy to work with you on the precise language of those sections, and we think they're eminently reasonable and would be a positive step for the state. We do, however, as written, we oppose the bill. We oppose because of the what I'll call the extended producer responsibility, or EPR model, that it would apply to lamp recycling. I use that term instead of the term product stewardship. Many folks use them interchangeably, but they are, in fact, different. I'm happy to elaborate that on that if you have questions about it. I'd like to give the following comments on the legislation, after which I'm happy to take your questions. First, I want to remind everyone how proactive and successful the industry has been at addressing the potential hazard of mercury in lighting. They've reduced the amount of mercury in all energy-efficient bulbs down to a fraction of what it was in the 1990s, perhaps 80 to 90% of what it once was. They continue to fall, mercury levels, as the companies compete with lower mercury models, and this happens every day. Remember also that the use of these lamps contribute to a net reduction to mercury emissions to the environment. The fact that we use them and use them more and more actually reduces the amount of mercury that is released to the environment because they draw less on what is by far the greatest source, and that is coal-fired power plants, coal-fired utility plants. The other thing to remember is that new generation non-mercury lighting alternatives are coming very rapidly thanks to enormous investment by the industry, fueled by government and market incentives. Halogen lamps you may have heard about, they're already available in stores. LEDs, light-emitting diodes, which is the next generation lighting, are going to be reaching consumer price points in the next several years. Meanwhile, with regard to recycling, NEMA members actively promote lamp recycling as the most appropriate management option for mercury lamps as they become waste. We fund and maintain www.lamprecycling.org, and this is a one-stop online source for lamp recycling information nationwide. There's been talk today of lamp labeling. Madam Chair, your statement about what the FTC is doing is correct, but what you need to know is that manufacturers have been labeling the package of every lamp sold in this country for years. You will find it on every lamp sold in North America. It's been going on since early in this decade. What FTC is doing is changing the label slightly and moving away from our URL, lamprecycle.org, to a new one, which you found doesn't work yet. Ours has in it a search engine and provides all the information that commercial...
I printed up for the metro area if anybody wants to look at it.
We have all the information that commercial and household generators of lamps need to know to find recycling sites. We also promote recycling through company programs and collaborative activities with the lamp recycling industry. Consumers have many other resources. Earth911.org, for example. Recycleabulb.com, which is run and managed by the Veolia company. So there are a lot of options out there available to consumers for information. SB 529 takes several steps to further address this issue, and some of which we've supported. Particularly, I want to acknowledge the value of Section 4, the mercury content standards. We would be happy to work with the Committee on Language to ensure that this section harmonizes with other states. There are a few complexities here in tying state standards to the situation in the European Union, which is always changing and is changing now. But the concept of establishing a ceiling that must be met by any supplier selling lamps in Oregon makes perfect sense to us. The other portion of the bill that we find eminently reasonable is the state procurement policy. This state, like most others, buys many lamps. And we're happy to assist in drafting this section in a way that ensures that the purchases are guided by the most effective criteria, in addition to mercury levels. It's another thing that we are familiar with from other states, and we're happy to work with you on that. I just want to make a few comments about the lamp recycling portion of the bill, which is the reason that NEMA at this point feels we would need to oppose this legislation. In a nutshell, extended producer responsibility is just simply not economically sustainable for lamps. Waste lamps have no recoverable value. The cost to recycle a lamp can be as much as 50% or more of the purchase price of a new lamp. That's just a couple of the many factors that differentiate the lamp market from those such as e-waste or rechargeable batteries. Moreover, the dynamics of the market are such that manufacturers have little, if any, opportunity to pass on these costs through the distribution chain. The economics simply don't work, particularly at an individual state level. The other thing to remember is that the promise of extended producer responsibility, as continually repeated by its promoters, is that it provides a necessary incentive to manufacturers to redesign their products, to make greener lamps, in other words. This is has been refuted emphatically by the lamp industry. As I said, they have, through competition amongst themselves, continually ratcheted down the amount of mercury in lamps and produced now a transformation in the lighting industry as we move away from mercury-containing lighting. The other thing is manufacturers are just simply not set up to collect CFLs. Unlike retailers, we don't have multiple locations where we interact with customers. There's no cost-effective way to do this, nor do they have a system to efficiently collect and disperse funds. So basically, a system like this would turn out to be inefficient and duplicative. There are dozens of manufacturers, foreign and domestic, and you'd have a non-competitive, highly inefficient system because a separation and accounting by individual manufacturer would be virtually impossible. So there's no method for the industry to determine their costs with any degree of certainty. Finally, data are hard to come by on how many lamps are being recycled. But there's ample evidence that lamp recycling has increased nationwide. And we know this because we deal with this, and we look at this issue in virtually every state. Commercial and industrial lamp generators, many of which have to recycle their lamps by federal law, have access to a nationwide network of lamp recyclers that will service them in virtually any location in the country. On the residential sector, as people have mentioned today, Home Depot, Lowe's, True Value, Menards, Aubuchon Hardware, more and more large and small chains of retailers are finding abilities to take bulbs back and recycle them free of charge. More can be done. The industry works very hard to promote recycling. As I said, we label every single package sold, and we do a lot of work independently through the companies to grow recycling, but there's an awful lot of recycling going on. When you talk about remote areas, we understand that that's where the problem of convenience comes in, and it's difficult to provide convenient options. The only thing I would ask you in that regard is, how much is it worth? What amount is worth spending to gather one lamp, or two, or ten, from a remote area where that lamp may contain 5 milligrams or less of mercury? I mean, what is it worth? When does it become economically inefficient to go get that lamp? So I just ask that you consider that in your thoughts and discussions on how the system should work and how convenient it should be. So in summary, we acknowledge that recycling costs ultimately have to be borne by some party and allocated in some fashion. But a system that lays the entire burden on manufacturers is the highest cost, least efficient option that this committee has available to it. So we're happy to work with the committee and to refine the portions of the bill that we support. That concludes my testimony. Happy to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Questions? Senator Hass.
Thank you. So if I'm just trying to, this is a, kind of a basic question. The business, for the most part, recycles because, A, there's federal statutes that require them on large projects. And why is it that they're there? I mean, I don't understand. If business has to recycle, like this building a few years ago was remodeled, all of these lights, old lights came out. Now, those were recycled.
Well, it depends. What we're talking about here, Madam Chair, Senator Hass, is what's called the Universal Waste Rule. This is a federal rule replicated in most states that says if you're above a certain level of hazardous waste that you're generating, including lamps, you must recycle it. There are various categories of generators of universal waste. If you're above certain thresholds, you must recycle. Smaller ones are exempt. I'm not an expert. I think there are folks in the room who probably know more about the details of the universal waste rule than I do. But any large institution typically falls above that threshold and is required federally, and in most cases by the state, to recycle those lamps. So what we're talking about here, what this law deals with in most of these laws, is the smaller generators, particularly the residential sector, because we all know more and more of us are using these bulbs, and there needs to be more opportunity for people to be able to recycle them.
Other questions? So I have one before we let you go, and we are going to make an announcement. I know we're running over, but there's another accident on I-5. So for those of you going back to Portland, apparently things are pretty stopped up. And so sorry about running late, but maybe by the time we are done here that it'll be cleared. Mark, I appreciate you coming here today and sharing this with us. You heard from the department that in Oregon, it's estimated that only about 2% of CFLs are being collected here.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the data, I'm sure it's not exact, but that's our best estimate right mm-hmm. now based on 2007 numbers. So I'd like to hear what you're doing in addition to labeling on the box itself to, and part of it is getting the word out to people. Obviously, it's got to be convenient locations, and as we've heard, some of it, we do have some already in the major metropolitan areas. Can you talk about what else? I mean, do newspaper ads, do TV ads, send out? Right now, a lot of people don't know what to do with their bulbs. So, does the industry take any responsibility for helping educate folks besides the warning? Or
well,
any information on the package?
Madam Chair, the companies do work with their retail customers to provide signage and to help them provide the information to their customers. Newspaper ads, television ads, I know from experience with this and dealing with it with regard to other products, that typically tends to be a black hole where you spend an awful lot of money to get very little results. May not be intuitive, but that's an enormously expensive endeavor. They're very active. All of us, myself, the members of the companies, they're very active in collaborating with other trade groups, with NGOs. We run dealing with targeted audiences, you know, particularly in the commercial side, because that's where the most of the lamps still are, to get out the word of their obligation and the opportunities they have to recycle. And, there's a fair amount of activity that goes on. Lamprecycle.org gets a tremendous amount of hits, and that's available not just on our packages, but through many other sources.
Okay. Well, obviously, just to follow up to that, we're not getting the word out here in Oregon if only 2%. If we're only recovering 2% on the residential side, it's a little bit higher in the commercial, although we're still at about 30%.
Well,
so obviously we need some more work.
I agree. I would like to talk to the department and know more about how they came up with that number. We know from having to do this in other states under law that it is very difficult to come up with an estimate for that number. Reasons are complicating factors such as the fact that all of us buy these bulbs and we sit them in our shelf for perhaps years before they wind up. So if you try to estimate if it's bought today and therefore going to be in the waste stream 5 years from now because of its lifetime, well, you don't know when it was actually put in the socket. It might be 7 years. So estimating that denominator of how many are out there to be recycled is extraordinarily difficult. And we've had big fights with the government of the state of Massachusetts and trying to come up with an accurate estimate. The other thing is there are very few reporting requirements on the recyclers. So oftentimes it's difficult to find out how many have actually been recycled. So we have data from surveys done in states such as Minnesota that suggest upwards of 15 to 20% of these bulbs among households are recycled. There isn't much data out there, but what we have, makes me think that 2% is a pretty low estimate.
Okay. Senator Hess?
I was just going to say I've had some luck lately with a 5-cent fee, so maybe there's some.
Are you suggesting a deposit on? Are you suggesting a deposit on bolts?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator.
One question, Mr. Fick. Back in about 1999, Metro went to commingling of waste for recycle. Would there be an opportunity if we undid that mess to have our local trash hauler collect, I mean, they collect our bottles, our glass bottles. Would there be an opportunity for our local waste collectors to collect CFLs?
Senator Olson, Madam Chair, I think Aura, who's going to be testifying afterwards, would be better prepared. I think there would be some technical challenges to having them do, as you described, just off the top of my head, the transportation is difficult. Adding another truck to collect these individually might be a challenge as well. But I think Aura, who's going to be testifying in this bill, would probably better be able to explain to you the challenges or benefits of a program like that.
Oh, the only reason I ask that is because my waste recycler will pick up oil and can transport that also. So there might be an opportunity because, as I see it, when consumers buy a bulb, they don't want to drive to Lowe's for one bulb to recycle it. And that's why they get thrown out. So if we could make it real easy, or they could just put them out someplace and somebody could get them, I think we could really increase recycling.
Thank you. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And I will, because we actually still have about 10 more people that would like to testify, what I'm going to do is ask Craig if you can come up, because you've come more than 100 miles. Is there anybody else that signed up on the sheet that cannot come back on Thursday so we can carry over this public hearing? What I see is most of the folks that are on here are people that are generally in the building. So is there anybody who signed up that cannot come back on Thursday, or it would be inconvenient for you to come back on Thursday? Anybody? Otherwise, we'll close the carry over the public hearing till next Thursday. Okay, so you get the last word today.
I'm back. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Craig Lorch, and I run, in addition to Total Reclaim, a company called Ecolights Northwest. We are a fluorescent lamp recycler based in Seattle. We consolidated here in Oregon as well as in Anchorage. We've been in business since 1996, and so we've been at this about 15 years and have a little bit of experience doing it. A lot of what we've been doing is education, because some people, when you ask them, when you tell them it's going to cost them some money, they go somewhere else for a while, and then you go back to your education. That's part of the process. We're the only lamp recycler in Washington State. We currently hold the Oregon State Recycling Contract, which means that we are recycling the lamps from this room. We support the recycling of all lamps from all generators without exception. That is what we're about. We definitely support the legislation's mandatory recycling or landfill ban, call it what you will, but definitely support that. Unfortunately, it's going to sound weird, but based on the scope of this legislation, I would have to oppose it as it's written. And the reason is how widely reaching it is. The definition of a covered entity includes household and conditionally exempt small quantity generators. Well, those guys are CESQGs in garbage language, at least up in Washington. And CESQGs are made such by generating 220 pounds of hazardous materials a month. Lamps are not hazardous. They're universal waste. They do not count towards your total, which means if you're an office building or perhaps this building, and this is a standalone facility, you probably aren't a hazardous waste generator, and you don't have to recycle your lamps if you're going to make CESQGs exempt. In this case, if you add it to the bill, that means that all of these types of buildings that have lots and lots of lighting but no other waste are going to be part of the manufacturer program. What that does in my life is it takes all of these individual customers, picks them up, and moves them into a new entity, over to a new program, where right now I have a contract with all these customers. That contract goes away. Suddenly I now have only one contract for the whole smear. So got off this thing. So places like Portland, most of the office buildings would be covered under this product stewardship program. So it goes way beyond just the CFLs. I mean, there is a market failure when it comes to collection of CFLs, but that market failure does not extend to business-generated lamps. We're out there picking them up every day. We've been at this 15 years. We know how to do it. Palmer mentioned the very same thing. There was a question about curbside pickup, and the city of Shoreline and the city of Kent in Washington are doing that. It's challenging. I know Waste Management has some programs in Florida trying to do that. It is challenging to accomplish that. I think I'm trying to keep this brief. Once again, we support recycling of all lamps by all generators, and look forward to working on a program to help make that happen. But as it's written, I find this challenging.
All right. Thank you, Craig. Appreciate you coming here today to share your thoughts. Any questions for Craig before we let him crawl up I-5 with the rest of us?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. With that, just an announcement again, we are going to carry over the public hearing on this bill, Senate Bill 529. We will reopen it up first thing on Thursday. So if you signed up, we will have the sheets available. I will also start off with this hearing, so apologize. But given that I'm losing committee members, I want to make sure we have a full discussion. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 529, close the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and we'll